Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. If you haven't listened before, I'm James Atkinson, online brand manager at DKR Witness, and we've actually got a new host with us this afternoon. So we've given Lucy a bit of a break, and instead we've got DKR Witness project editor and proud Scot, Daniel Watt.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hello, lovely for you to be here. Obviously, digitally.
Yeah. Like, in the virtual podcast recording studio.
Absolutely. And as you might have guessed from Daniel's expertise or accent, today our focus destination is Scotland. So famed for majestic mountains, moody moorlands, and tranquil lochs, Scotland is an absolute joy for outdoor enthusiasts. But its urban centres offer cutting-edge art galleries, lively nightlife, and a really flourishing foodie scene.
Although Scotland has had a better record than the rest of the UK in terms of the impact of COVID, and certainly there's a lot of space to practice social distancing, it's still very much in the recovery phase right now. However, with more Brits looking at staycations this year, Scotland has become many travellers' domestic destination of choice within recent months.
So today, we've got some very special guests with an enormous degree of knowledge about all things Scotland. We're talking to Edinburgh-based travel writer and itinerary planner Kay Gillespie, founder of The Chaotic Scot, a Scottish travel blog packed with fun, food and inspiration. Welcome, Kay.
Hi.
And live from the Isle of Rasay, just off the east coast of Skye in the Inner Hebrides, we're joined by Callum Gillies, man of many talents. He's a YouTuber, historian, artist, photographer, and whiskey and gin distiller. Hi, Callum.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks. That intro went on a while.
It did. Kay was asking me earlier what it was you do, and I was like, well, I think it does quite a lot of things, actually.
I never knew I'd answer that.
So just so you guys know, we're going to explore the past, present and future of travelling in Scotland, understanding what makes it such a unique place to go, but also how coronavirus has impacted Scottish life and how we may be able to visit again in the future. Fingers crossed. So
hopefully, yes.
Without further ado, let's get to it. So we're going to start by looking at all things Scotland, sort of pre-COVID, but just generally like a kind of love letter to Scotland, really. So sort of starting with UK, what would you say makes Scotland so unique?
For me, and what really strikes me about Scotland is that I feel like it means so much to so many people. And there's over 50 million people worldwide that have claims to Scottish heritage, and they kind of have that really deep connection. So for a lot of people, they've grown up hearing stories of Scotland and dreaming of coming one day. So when they do get here, it's, you know, it's a pretty memorable experience for them. And even some people that I've spoken to that don't have any Scottish heritage, they've told me that they have a feeling of coming home when they've come to Scotland, or that they could easily live here. And I think that really says a lot about a place, because I'm sure we've all travelled to many different places, but it's not everywhere that you could say you would call home. So I think Scotland has that special something that kind of pulls people in and makes people fall in love. It really does have quite a profound effect on people. And I don't think that necessarily everywhere has that exact same kind of pull.
Yeah, because I mean, we were saying earlier, sort of, it's such a diverse country. You've got kind of pretty big cities, really modern cities with like lots of kind of culture going on. You've got kind of lots of like pretty lovely villages in the sort of centre, in the lowlands, and then up in the highlands, you've got something completely different. But I mean, when I've been to each of them, like there's something that's quite cozy and homely almost about it, in really different ways. It's
definitely. There's just so much, you know, like you say, it's a small country, so that you don't have to drive really long distances for the landscapes to change and for the experiences to change. You know, a lot of people come here from huge countries like Australia and America and Canada, and they could go on a road trip and be driving, you know, on a pretty long stretch and there not be anything, you know, particular points of interest for quite a while. Whereas Scotland, you know, you can be in a lively city and within 2 hours the highlands are springing up before you, and there's really wild and remote areas, and then a little bit further you'll find the coast, Caribbean style beaches, you know, hello Scotland. And you can experience all of this, and you know, even just one relatively short trip. When you go on a road trip in Scotland, it's not even just like driving from A to B. There's so many points of interest and beautiful places in between. And I think that is what makes Scotland so unique. There's something that different people will be drawn to and kind of pulled in by.
Definitely. And Kay, as well, you were saying on your blog, you became a tour guide at 22, but you'd never actually been to the Highlands before.
Yeah.
which is amazing. It must have been, I mean, that must have been an amazing experience to finally go up there and be like, wow.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely... It was quite a pivotal point in my life, actually. And it was by total accident. I had applied for a job in the sales office, mainly because the sister company in Europe, I had really wanted to do some tours with them. And if you got a job in the office, you would get discounts on their tours. So I had my eye on the European trips. So it was, I mean, quite honestly, it was nothing to do with Scotland. And I went to the interview, and obviously because I like to chat, they had called me a few days later and said, you know, we don't think you're a great fit for the office, but would you like to be a tour guide? And I had said, you know, I dismissed it quite quickly and said, you know, there's no way. I've never even been to the Highlands. It's not something I've ever thought about. I don't think I've got the confidence to do it. And they took a chance on me and they took me on that training trip. And I just didn't really have any expectations. And then as we drove up into the Highlands and the landscapes began to change, and then driving into Glencoe for the first time, I mean, it was literally, you know, it really took my breath away. And yeah, I don't think you ever forget the first time that you see Glencoe.
Yeah, definitely. That route in particular, it's like the road to the Highlands, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's absolutely stunning.
So I think that was the love affair really started there. And because it was kind of, you know, I hadn't grown up in these places. I was 22. So I can really remember how that felt. And then for the rest of that season, I got to watch other people have that experience for the first time. And all of a sudden it was like, because I had found out about this, you know, not secret place, I wanted to tell everyone. So I was able to do that on my tours, obviously. And then when I left my job as a tour guide, I started the blog shortly after. So that became my way of guiding people around Scotland. That never forgetting how it felt, that's what kind of drives me, and that's what I get out of sharing with other people.
Amazing.
That's great.
And Callum, you kind of did the opposite almost, in terms of you were born and raised in Rousay, which is just, if I'm right, it's just off Skye, right?
Yeah, it's between Skye and mainland Scotland, I would say. So it's like a little sliver of land between the Isle of Skye and Scotland.
We can actually see the lovely view out of Callum's window as well at the minute, which is pretty incredible. I'm
very lucky today.
Whereas me and Danielle are here in rainy London. but then you kind of you moved away a bit for like college and uni, and you lived in Orkney for a little bit, and then you moved back to Rousay. So how did that move back come about?
Yeah, I I grew up on Rassay. I worked at sea for a long time. I actually worked in the ferries, kind of around Scotland, on the mm-hmm. west coast specifically. And yeah, I always kind of, people always told me I should be a tour guide because I talk a lot, I guess. But it wasn't until I actually left work. I actually broke my hip in a rock climbing accident and I couldn't go back to sea. So I moved up to Orkney and I got bored. I was looking for some work and I ended up stumbling into a, not falling, but I kind of just found a job. I am known for that, but I just found a job at this the historical site, a tomb up in Orkney, and I started doing tour guiding. And I it's funny, I think growing up on Rassay, you know, at the end of the day, most people on Rassay, you know, it's a kind of working class, you know, you're working at sea, you're working on farms and stuff like that. So I guess I never really thought of a creative job, because I, you know, tour guiding to me is like a creative industries job. You know, you're talking and you're presenting, you're coming up with ideas, all that kind of stuff.
You're entertaining too, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to keep people's attention.
Right? Yeah, like I say, I do talk a lot, which did always helped, you know. But I think it's one of those things where it really just, you know, you just kind of fell into it by luck. But like what yourself was saying there, Kay, you know, I didn't really go in looking for tour guiding or anything. But specifically with Rassay, after I'd been doing some touring up in Orkney, I basically got a call from one of the guys who was helping build the distillery here and said, listen, you're from Rassay, you can talk to people. would you come home and work here? And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll do that. And so I moved back in 2017 and I've been here ever since. So my first full-time job on Rassay is being a tour guide. Before that, it was, you know, working at sea or part-time stuff. You know, there aren't that many jobs in the islands. So yeah, it's been an odd sort of story of getting to where I am now, I suppose.
I actually kind of looked up the story of the distillery on Rassay. I think it only opened in 2017. Is that right? And and previously the island was really famous for like illicit stills, which Danielle was kind of explaining to me the other day. can you tell us a bit about like kind of how that's different, like how the distillery sort of came to be?
Yeah, the wording we always use on the website is really good. The first legal distillery on the Isle of Rassay. That comes up quite a lot in my mind. It's always good. It's a good bit of marketing speech there as well. But also true. You know, I mean, Rassay is like a lot of places that was very rural, very much cut off. You know, for context, I mentioned Rassay's between Skye and the mainland. It's about 14 miles long. It's about 3.5 miles wide. The best way to describe it is it's the exact same size and shape as Manhattan Island in New York City, except they've got about 1.6 million people. We've got about 160 people that live here. But, you know, you go back into the past and the population was obviously a lot bigger. You're talking closer to about 2,000 people in the late 1800s. And we call them illicit stills now. But back then, they weren't really illegal. They were essentially outlawed when the government started trying to moderate and tax a lot more distilleries. And what you would find is often little small burns, rivers and streams that would have just been dammed up with a very small copper still. Usually a little worm tub, which is used for condensing and cooling the spirit, and then some casks really to put it into. We kind of look at it now, you know, we call it whiskey stills and stuff like that. But back then, it probably wouldn't really have resembled what we would call whiskey now. You know, it might have even looked closer to something like a gin or a botanical spirit in some ways. But there are some rumors, apparently, you know, people would often hang out washing and washing lines and stuff like that to warn the islanders when like the government excise men were coming over and all this kind of stuff. A lot of very colourful stories, but certainly there are archaeological sites on the island where you can see the rivers have been dammed up and stuff like that. So I think that's where they got the idea for the distillery, in that they thought, well, this is a great location. It's really cool to bring back a new industry to this, but you know, having that sort of history back there in the background. So the co-founders, Alistair Day, Bill Dobby, they came up here in 2016. They kind of saw this old building where I am now, the original house, Bonny Hill House, and thought, well, let's build a distillery around that. So did our first distillation almost exactly 3 years ago. Next month, we will have our very first legal Scotch whiskey, because of course it takes 3 years to actually age it.
Oh, really?
So I'm very busy right now getting all that ready.
And Kay, you've kind of been almost pretty much everywhere in Scotland by the looks of it. I think we were discussing before that that there was a couple of places you hadn't been to, but is there like kind of somewhere that like kind of one place that stands out that maybe people haven't heard of before?
If you want to share that with us.
Yeah.
It might be her secret location.
Well, yeah. hidden gems in Scotland don't stay that way for very long. So, I mean, it's hard because there's so many places that I love for different reasons. The Scottish islands are obviously, they're my favourite place on earth. There's nowhere else I would rather be than on an island. I've been to 57 so far, and people always ask which are my favourites. So the Isle of Iona is definitely right up there. And I suppose it's well known to people that are in the know, but there are still a lot of my readers or clients that I speak to that hadn't, you know, factored it into their itinerary. Probably because it's not super straightforward to get to. You take a ferry from Oban over to Mull, then it's over an hour's drive to another ferry port and then another short ferry crossing. But the journey is, I mean, every leg of the journey is stunning. And it's just so worth it when you get there. And kind of like a similar experience to when I saw Glencoe for the first time. There's just, when you approach Iona and the ferry crossing's only about 10 minutes, just over a narrow sound of water. And when you approach and there's just this bright turquoise water and a row of wee cottages, and it's just honestly the most serene and beautiful place I think I've ever been. And a lot of people speak about a feeling that you get on Iona. I'm not a religious or massively spiritual person, but it was a pilgrimage route for many years because the abbey there was established by St. Columba in the 6th century. So it's been a pilgrimage from people all over the world. And people do come for that religious and spiritual element and yoga and all of this kind of stuff. But I was kind of unaware of the feeling that you get when you get there before I had gone. And it was when I came back and I was speaking to people and they said, you know, did you feel it? And I was like, yeah, actually, I really, really did. And it was, I almost felt quite emotional when I had to board the ferry and leave again. So, and I've kind of made my own little annual pilgrimage every year since, not this year, sadly. But it's just, and it's tiny. You can visit the abbey. There's kind of one, the highest point on the island, Dunee. The views from up there back over to Mull and to the Treshness Isles and to the Isle of Staffa are just amazing. And the beaches are, yeah, they're those Caribbean style beaches that I was talking about, with kind of dark clouds hanging over sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. If only we could count on the weather, right?
Yeah. But I just, if people can go, I do recommend, especially if they've got quite a hectic itinerary, I say, you know, just go and stay on Iona for a night or two and just recharge and soak up the serenity and the peacefulness. So that's definitely my number one spot. But yeah, I've probably got a top 10 islands, but that would come in at number one.
And Callum, if you had like an island you could go to other than, let's say, or you would recommend people to go to, have you got one? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat similar. I haven't actually, I need to count how many islands. That's a good idea. I should really keep a list. Yeah. I've been to, but, I mean, I second Iona in a lot of ways. I think it's amazing. It's such an amazing island. And also from a historical point of view, I think Iona's, well, obviously it has a lot of really historical elements to it, especially the abbey and stuff. But I think it's also an important way to maybe understand that the Scottish islands weren't always the boondocks. Now to us, they're remote, they're out of the way, you know. But historically, Iona was a huge center point. It was this massive center of, you know, religious study and research and various other things too. And I think you get an idea of that when you reach there and you kind of see the reach the island itself had, you know. I would say some of my favorite islands I found were up in Orkney. I mean, Papa Westry, which is a tiny island off Westry, which is an island off mainland Orkney. And of course, Orkney is this big archipelago anyway. But it is really incredible. It's about 60, 70 people. Some of the oldest dwelling structures, houses in Europe are found there. Wow. And what you'll find though is just this really interesting small community. And I think I'm always very interested to see how different island communities act and you know, the kind of cultural stuff that you find there. The other thing that's great about the Orkney Islands is each island is so different. I mean, they obviously all have such a rich history, but you'll go to, say, Westry or maybe Sandy, and you'll find two completely different islands, two completely different cultures, histories. Then you'll maybe go to South Royalty or Hoy and you'll find all the vast remains of the World Wars, you know, those huge naval bases up there, big naval fleets, all that kind of stuff too. I mean, special shout out to Flada, which is a tiny island off Rasay. I would say that's probably my favourite island to go visit if I need to get away from Rasay and go to a smaller island, I guess. But that's where my grandfather's from, so he grew up there. It's now abandoned, but it had a population of about 60, 70 people. Very remote. Very tough life they had there. But see, when you go up now, it's very poignant because it does remind you, of course, that all these communities are now just gone. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't exist anymore. But you can still see the huge remains, you know, the farms, all the buildings they had up there and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's endless. I don't want it to turn into just this episode all about Ireland. There's plenty of other places in Scotland.
There's so much to say.
The islands are like a... Exactly. I always like islands because you go to one island and you've got a boundary then. If you do go to Glencoe, it's amazing. But it's like, oh, God, there's every hill. I want to climb everything. Yeah, I want to see everything.
Where exactly.
You go to an island, it's like, I can knock this out in a day. I can see everything. And you can really get a good feeling for it, you know? I'm all about efficiency.
Exactly. No, it does. It makes it feel very manageable, doesn't it?
There's obviously so many places to go in Scotland, but there's kind of like the famous ones that kind of a lot of people will go to and do suffer from over tourism. So I'm thinking sort of Loch Lomond and Loch Ness and places like that. Is there a kind of trend in more people like kind of going a bit further out and finding new places? Particularly maybe going to places like Rasay?
I think there's the trends obviously change. Skye has obviously been a very popular one for years. It went social media famous and was in all different BuzzFeed articles, and it was very busy on Skye. So even just, and I certainly encourage my itinerary planning clients, even just to go over to Rasay for the day from Skye, which there's probably some people originally would not have done. They would have, you know, gone straight up to Portree and up the Trotternish Peninsula and to all the kind of the main places. And it's I think people are now probably becoming more inclined to take these wee detours. I even think Lewis and Harris is definitely picking up now as well. It's maybe the people that have been to Skye before and are coming on another trip. You're always going to have people that do want to come and go to the same places that they're sisters and cousins and neighbours and pals have been to. They want to go to Inverness, they want to go to Skye, they want to see Edinburgh Castle and stuff, but there are definitely people that want to avoid the crowds and go to the more remote corners, or they're coming back for a second or third trip and they want to have a more local experience. So, and those are the kind of trips that I really like helping them plan rather than just following the classic tourist trail.
Yeah, I think in some ways Skye suffered from the fact that it's a perfect storm, and the fact that it's remote and out of the way. There's all these incredible sites that make a perfect photo. It's been featured in so many films and various things too. But also, of course, it's so easily accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably it's the most easily accessible island that you will find in Scotland. So it has kind of suffered, I think, somewhat of a rush in the past few years as people have been coming up. And there was a bit of a problem, I think, as some of the infrastructure maybe couldn't handle that. But I think I sometimes push back against that somewhat, because I think there's a lot of, opinion, oh, well, you know, got too many tourists, there's too much tourism happening in certain areas. And I always think that it's unfair to put the blame on the tourists. It's to me, it's the government and local councils that need to invest in the infrastructure for the tourists that are coming up. It's not their fault that they want to come up and visit. We're trying to encourage people coming up, you know. But yeah, I think we've noticed a lot more people coming over to Rasay in the past 3 years. I mean, me personally as well, who have... really, I think, realised, wow, okay, yeah, this is a 15-minute ferry ride. We can jump on, we can come across, we can leave our car, so we don't have to take our car over. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of Skye is only accessible via car or, like, you know, bus services and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of come over, see the entire island. It's a little bit quieter. There's more businesses now, like ourselves, Rasay House, the outdoor centre. My sister has a jewellery shop, the Silver Grasshopper, and there's also the local community stores and stuff like that too. So I think that's what's quite, we're kind of very well positioned in that a lot of people come over, and when they do come over, it's a little bit like Kay said, they kind of realise, okay, we can slow down, we can have a look around the place. We don't have to rush to every location and get the photograph and then be away, you know. Mm-hmm. But I always do say, I think A lot of tourists, when they come up, I think it's about managing expectations. You should never expect that you're going to find a place abandoned on your own and you can just get your photos there and nobody's going to bother you. The fun of it is that there's people around and you can experience it and stuff like that as well. You know, and you know, Scotland is, it's maybe quite, it's a small pool, but it's a million miles deep, you know, so everywhere you go, there is something to find. You know, you're never going to regret, I think, driving down a road or going somewhere that's maybe not listed in the top 10 locations or something like that.
So how do you kind of take that into account when you're building an itinerary for someone, Kay? Like, what if they, how does the conversation start, for instance? Like, do people say, I really want to go get lost in Scotland? Or do people say, I want to see these five places and then take me wherever?
It's a total mix, to be honest. So after I'm initially approached by email, I send back quite a detailed questionnaire to really kind of hone in on what it is that people are looking for. And I'll ask them, you know, what sort of speed of travel, what style, you know, are you hostels, are you luxury? What's the minimum you'd like to spend in each place? What's the maximum? And I take all that into account, and then I give them feedback before I even start and say, I'll be quite honest, a lot of the time I'll say that's completely unrealistic. Or I'll say, you know, based on what you're saying, I don't think it's worth you taking a four-hour detour from Inverness just to see John O'Groats and drive back down. So I very much, I take the lead from what the clients want. I'm never going to totally take away from the plan or the dream that they have. But as I say, I could kind of try and add some Scottish sparkle and give them kind of local advice, and then make alternative suggestions if I can, whilst obviously taking into account the things that they want. You know, they will want to go and visit some castles and distilleries, and then I throw in a few wee hidden gems or places that, you know, you probably wouldn't find in the type of articles that we're talking about, or even sometimes on Google Maps, because Google Maps is not always that reliable in remote places. You know, so yeah, it's just I'll sometimes try and suggest alternatives, and sometimes people are quite resistant, and you know, they do, there are things that they want to see and they won't budge, and everyone is entitled, you know, it's their holiday. I'm not going to dictate what people should do, but I'll certainly give my suggestions on it. And the feedback that I often receive is that, you know, that they had experiences and visited places that they just would never have found otherwise. So, and that's why I do it. It's really rewarding for me when that happens. So
totally imagine. Yeah. All right, so after we've painted that lovely picture of Scotland, should we discuss a little bit about kind of what it's been like in the past weird year? So we'll move on to that.
So now let's talk a little bit about the present day and how Scotland is hopefully starting to recover from the impact of COVID-19.
For context, we're recording this in August, when Scotland is sort of slowly reopening, with visitors starting to return from the rest of Great Britain and possibly from Europe too. However, the country did experience its first local lockdown in the city of Aberdeen, which saw a spike in cases quite recently. So it's still a bit on a knife edge, like as it is around the world, really.
A bit touch and go.
But sort of, Kay, like... You're based in Edinburgh, and obviously coronavirus first kind of came to Scotland and Great Britain in March. What do you kind of remember about that time? And were you in Edinburgh for the whole of lockdown?
So I was actually, I had just gone on to my last trip, my last adventure before lockdown, was to Rannoch Station, which is this remote and beautiful little train station in the middle of Rannoch Moor, which is just pure wilderness, and it was like a blizzard up there. Everything was blanketed in snow. I stayed in this gorgeous wee glamping hut with floor-to-ceiling glass and just looking out at the sun hitting the snow in the morning. And I was very much, when I look back at it now, I was very much in a wee bubble. There was murmurs of the lockdown happening. Things were kind of starting to kick off a bit, but I hadn't realised quite how quickly things were going to change for me. So I got back on the train and was back down in Edinburgh on the Saturday. And on the Tuesday, I found out that my mum had come into contact with someone that potentially had the virus. So I had to go into isolation from that day. And a week later, we officially went into lockdown. So I kind of had a head start on everyone else. And I had just arrived back from the wilderness, and suddenly I was confined to my wee flat in Edinburgh. So, it was definitely, it was a challenging time. And it was only in the coming weeks that I realised, you know, the real impact that it was going to have on both myself and on tourism and, you know, just, you know, the wider country and the world, really. I lost my itinerary planning clients. I had a number of campaigns booked in this year. It was actually set to be my best year of travel and work yet. And I kind of lost my clients. And then it was just me in the flat. It was quite hard as someone that travels a lot, being confined to the city. I think, and a lot of people will probably be able to relate, it did give everyone an opportunity to kind of slow down, and it gave me a chance to kind of have a bit of a breather and pursue some other projects, including my Dreaming of Scotland Facebook group, which I launched in April. And it was as a distraction for myself and for my readers and for anyone else that wanted to join. It was to make people feel closer to Scotland, people that wished that they could be here. We were all sharing our memories of previous trips, but also our dreams for future adventures. And the group had 1,000 members in the first day, I think, and it's now at over 4,000 members, which is great.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah. And it was just such a nice, positive space. I kind of prohibited any chat about the virus. So I called it the non-sweary C word, and people were not allowed to, use it in the group, because I did notice in other places, it really was the, and rightly so, but it really was the centre of conversation, and people, you know, quite upset talking about missed trips and lost work. And I just wanted people to have a wee escapism from that. And I think people did appreciate it. So it was all the positive vibes and happy dreams of the future. So that was a really positive thing to come out of lockdown for me. So, but obviously it was a challenge, and it was a kind of a long few months.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something in lockdowns around the world about, like, people, you know, it's been really heartening to see people's relationships with travel, like, and how much they love it, how important it is as a part of their life, but how important certain destinations are as well. You're saying that you got like 1,000, members in your first day. And I think that kind of shows like what kind of, you know, people were taking a step back and thinking, okay, where do I want to visit next? Like starting to dream again and looking forward to and making the most of it in a way. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I guess in a way as well, it's opening up that space for a community. You know, you're all in your houses on your own, or your flats on your own. And here's this space online that all of a sudden you can still, I mean, I know it's not the same, but you can share your inspiration, you can share your stories, you can look at beautiful photographs and, you know, just keep the love of travel alive, even though we're all cooped up.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, and it really did bring us all together, and people did regularly comment and say, you know, thank you for taking us on a wee journey to Scotland, or, you know, when we can't be there, we would, and that, you know, I would share memories from trips that I had done, and you know, people were saying thank you so much for taking the time to give us this wee bit of Scotland when we wish that we were there too. So it was really good.
Yeah, definitely. Callum, how about life on Rasi when lockdown hit? What are your memories of that?
Yeah, it's strange. I think, you know, I genuinely think in years to come, people are going to look back on this as a real, like, it's like, where were you when you heard, you know, World War II was announced? You know, it's a real, I think everyone's kind of got that moment that they kind of really, they woke up to it. You know, I mean, I did Christmas up in Orkney, and then I came down and I had New Year on Rasi. And on January 3rd, I went to get a tank of fuel for my car. And then I did not leave Rasi until August 6th there, I think. Just when I went up to Orkney. You know, I mean, that was it. The island was closed off. You know, no back or forth travel unless, you know, essential things. And from the context of the distillery, you know, we had so much planned this year. And we obviously had the hotel. I'm sitting in one of the bedrooms that was meant to be open right now. We had all of our new tours set up. We were approaching to the point, of course, where we have our whiskey this year. Obviously, all the events, you know, there's so many whiskey events and shows and stuff like that throughout the year too. And basically all of that just essentially straight away cancelled. You know, So it was very strange from the business point of view. We adapted very well. You know, we opened up online sales. We dispatch and send everything out here from RASi. So we were perfectly set up to be doing that kind of work. And I basically just transitioned to working at home. I'm really just back in the office as of this week. But honestly, life on RASi, I'm probably one of the very few people in the world whose life just didn't really change. You know, we didn't leave RASi, but that's it. You know, I just, you know, started digging up my garden more to plant more potatoes. And I went out and, you know, did my photography work, and I kind of did my work from home. And it's actually, it made me really appreciate, you know, island life in that way. I've always been very appreciative of living on RASi. And it's mainly because I think a lot of my interests line up quite well with living on the island. But it made me really appreciate what we have here in some ways, you know, but also just how, you know, tenuous it can be. It just shows you, you know, I mean, you think, you know, my grandfather's 92, and he couldn't really quite believe this idea, yeah, you know, of something that had arisen in China in December was suddenly shutting down our entire island in, you know, February, March, you know. it really puts things in perspective in some way. But yeah, very odd on a business global scale. Massive disruption. But then locally, you know, we kind of locked down, community got together, and we kind of just saw it through. Things are kind of opening up slightly now, but it's, still, you know, we're still slowly moving our way out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think your grandfather was the only one to be feeling like that, to be honest, Callum.
Exactly.
I think all of us are like, wait, what? Okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about, there was a bit of a fear at the beginning of lockdown, from what I understand, and this was marked out by the Scottish Government, actually, that people from Edinburgh and Glasgow and the larger cities and towns, when lockdown hit, were going to start spreading out into the Highlands and Islands and more rural areas. And obviously, the infrastructure wasn't necessarily there to support a global pandemic hitting that particular place. I'm wondering, like, did any of that happen, or do you find that people were actually quite happy to just stay put and wait out?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly, you know, it is a problem. Obviously, infrastructure is a key thing. Our community Facebook group and stuff like that, you know, for RASi put out a post basically saying, like, you know, we don't have the greatest connection here to local infrastructure and emergency services and stuff like that, and to be aware. And I think there was a lot of worries at the start, and we all saw the news reports, you know, of, you know, there was a lot of folks going to rural areas in England, Scotland, Wales, stuff like that, at the kind of beginning of lockdown. I think on the whole, certainly, I think most people were pretty sensible, to be honest. I think most people recognised that they were safest at home and stuff like that. Certainly on RASi, we are, and most islands, we're very unique and lucky in the fact that Cal Mac, the ferry operator, basically said, you know, you have to be a resident to come to the island, which meant that we essentially didn't have to worry about it. You know, I think it would be more difficult for small places like, you know, Achnacheen and places in Glencoe and stuff like that, where, you know, you could just drive up from anywhere. But I think on the whole, most people were pretty sensible and followed advice. We're only really just seeing now, like I say, a lot of even people who have maybe a second home or people who rent out Airbnbs and accommodation who have actually started kind of coming back up. And I think a lot of people have been sensible about it. I always say as well to a lot of the locals here, it's the folks from the cities that really know how to abide by the rules. We've had it pretty easy. We don't really think about the 2 meter distancing because you're always about a mile and a half from people on RASi. And, you know, it's not something we worry about as much. I personally think that, you know, if you're coming up from the city, you're probably far more aware of the ways to properly wash your hands and mask wearing and distancing and all of that kind of stuff too. So yeah, you know, at the start there was a bit of worry, but I think, yeah, generally people have been pretty good and followed the rules pretty well.
That's good. That is good.
And Kay, obviously you're in Edinburgh and the Edinburgh Festival was cancelled this year, which must have been quite weird, right?
Yeah, it was such a blow. I mean, I think it was almost inevitable. And, you know, while we probably all suspected that it would happen, to see them officially pull the plug was really sad. You know, I think most locals are guilty at some point of having a wee moan about the festival at the time, and it's too busy, you can't get a taxi, everything takes longer to get from A to B. But actually, you know, there's such a buzz about the city at this time of year. It's not just a festival for international visitors, it's very much for the locals as well. And it does just feel very strange. Almost just sometimes I have to remind myself that it's August, because there's just nothing about the city that is the way that it would normally be at this time. And obviously the impact on the businesses, the hospitality and tourism businesses, is massive. You know, all the venues and just all of the wee touch points where people would have been visiting attractions and staying in local accommodation, taking trips into the Highlands and stuff like that. So it's just really, it's surreal to see it like this, to be honest. And it is, it's a huge loss to the city, but absolutely understand why the decision was taken. But it is really, really disappointing nonetheless.
And are things starting to pick up now?
They are picking up slightly during lockdown, because I do live, you know, within walking distance of the city centre. I had walked up to the Royal Mile and through the city centre a couple of times. And it was, I mean, there was one day that I walked up the Royal Mile and I didn't see another person. And that was just so strange. I actually stood up on the castle esplanade and I was the only person up there. And I thought, this will never... You know, I really soaked it in because I thought, I will never see my city like this again. And it was great being able to take some photos without people in the way, but it just wasn't the city that as I know it. So seeing it again since then, I can see the difference. It has picked up a bit. There's probably more people travelling to and from their work as well, but there are tourists around. The weekend that, or the week that the pubs and restaurants reopened for dining and drinking outside, I had been away on a trip and I came back and I was like, whoa, everything looks really strange. And it was just the cafe culture had really resumed again. And that weekend I sat outside having lunch and wine with my friend and I was like, I feel like I'm on holiday in the city centre. You know, it was just, and the sun was shining. It was just so strange. So it's really nice seeing the businesses that have reopened. Some of them have adapted really well and managed to kind of power through. But there are obviously a number of places that still aren't open. I don't know if some of them will. I don't know if some of the businesses will survive. So, it's been really hard to see that. But it is nice, on the other hand, to see things picking up and things a bit busier. So,
but do you guys find, you know, since places have started to open up a little bit and life is starting to resume, and you know, maybe you've been out to the pub for that first, you know, post lockdown beer or whatever, do you feel like there's a new appreciation for it? Are you like loving every minute of that, or are you still feeling a little bit apprehensive?
No, I think I was definitely in the overexcited mode. I definitely fell into that category. You know, obviously being cautious while I was doing it, but it was definitely, everything was like a heightened experience. You know, that first pint or sitting outside having lunch with a friend, the first road trip that I went on, and just driving over the Forth Bridge, the Queen's Ferry Crossing, the New Bridge, over to Fife. I mean, it felt like I was, you know, it was like the great escape. I was finally leaving the city. and just seeing the scenery, and not even like the most dramatic scenery, but just seeing these rural areas, it was just, I just had the biggest smile on my face the whole time. So it was definitely, I was just in a kind of state of excitement and like, oh, where, like, you know, where can I go and what can I do? And that's kind of, the novelty's worn off a bit now. Things are kind of settling down into the new normal, and I've kind of calmed down a bit. But I do think that, you know, most people will agree that I think we'll all just have appreciation for you know, the small things, and for time out, well, for certainly people in the city, you know, for that time outdoors or out with the city, or being able to spend time with friends and family again, visit people that have got new babies, and all of these wee moments that you really missed when you were kind of in solitude. So I think we'll all take that away from this experience for sure.
And Callum, you were saying Rissay hasn't really changed that much during lockdown, but I guess the biggest change would be the ferry, right? How was kind of leaving for the first time?
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, the thing is, I mean, Rissay, it was very odd during the whole lockdown, in that, you know, there just wasn't anyone around. It was a bit like, it was the same where I was going to a lot of locations and kind of marvelling the fact that there just wasn't people around. In fact, the thing that really solidified it was one day I was out walking, I looked up and I saw a plane flying over for the first time in about 2 weeks. And it felt like I was in some sort of post-apocalyptic movie, because, you know, Rasse's a direct line, you know, over to, you know, Boston and, you know, transatlantic flights. And I was like, oh, a plane. Do you remember them? And I mean, so, you know, there was, but I will say, like I say, compared to everyone else, we've had it very easy. But yeah, getting onto the ferry for that first time when I went up to Orkney, it was bizarre. And we pulled into Brora, which is kind of halfway up on the drive up to the top, up to John O'Groats, really, where you get the ferry. And I remember getting out of the car for the first time, and I had to put a mask on. And the shop here, our local shop, has just really been doing deliveries. You pick up boxes of supplies. We didn't have to go into the shops and stuff like that as much. So I put on my mask kind of for the first time to go into the co-op. There was no one around. It's the middle of, you know, getting to the start of August, no one around. And as I get out of the car, two ambulances fly by with like all the sirens blaring. And I was like, this is just, I'm just in a film from the post-apocalypse. This is, yeah. I was thinking, imagine if I'd stepped out of some sort of TARDIS from 1 year ago previously. I would have gone mad wondering what on earth had gone on.
Yeah,
you know?
Unrecognizable, right?
Yeah, it's so strange. But that first moment of getting onto the ferry and then getting off, it was very, very strange. I think that's definitely the longest amount of time I've gone without leaving the island at all, you know, in any way. So, another moment that I'll really remember forever.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So we're going to have a quick look at what next for Scotland, and in particular, sort of like what next for traveling in Scotland. So to start with, Callum, you kind of briefly mentioned that you'd been to Orkney, and Kay, you've obviously done a trip up to Shetland. Do you have any kind of other future travel plans? Are you getting out? Are you going elsewhere?
At the moment, and I usually, as a kind of rule of thumb, have about three different trips to look forward to at any time. But kind of given the current situation, I've been trying not to plan too far in advance and kind of take things a bit slowly. So my next trip will be a wild camping trip. So I'm going to be working in partnership with a new start company that are going to be hiring out camping equipment for people that are coming to Scotland. So cool. They are giving me a box of camping gear and I can just choose the destination, which is really exciting. So there is a spot up near Arisaig that I have my eye on. So it involves a bit of a hike to an abandoned village in Abothe on the beach, which sounds amazing. So that will hopefully happen soon, weather dependent. And then my next trip that I have planned is to the Isle of Arran in October. It's an amazing wee island. And I'm staying on a llama farm in a wooden barrel glamping pod. So it sounds like a great place, and like we're hiring a wood-fired hot tub and a wood-fired pizza oven for the night, which they provide on site. So that should be really fun. So yeah, a couple of trips in the pipeline, and to be honest, there's actually the availability for places in the next few weeks has been quite low. The Scottish staycation trend is in full swing, which is amazing because there's just so many people that probably didn't travel Scotland before or that had overseas adventures planned that are now exploring their own backyard, which is great. And it's also great for the accommodation providers and all the wee businesses to see this increase in business again.
Do you think it could lead to a different appreciation of the country that Scottish people are in terms of, you talked about that kind of moment when you were 22 and getting to the Highlands for the first time and, you know, falling in love and never looking back? Do you think that could happen for lots of people now?
100%. It's something that I was actually thinking about recently. My inbox on Facebook and Instagram and like my personal one has just been like absolutely inundated with messages from people like from school, friends of friends, old workmates, and people that traditionally would just not really go on holiday in Scotland are now getting in touch with me for advice, which is amazing. And I'm seeing a lot of people's photos crop up and echoing the kind of thoughts that I had when I first visited these places. So, I mean, that's definitely another really positive thing that's coming out of all of this, is that I can see so many more people are appreciating what's on their own doorstep. So, and hopefully, even when we can, we can travel internationally at the moment, but a lot of people are still choosing not to. I would like to think, and I would hope, that the Scottish staycation trend will stick around for a lot longer.
Absolutely. And Callum, have you got any kind of trips planned or coming up?
Yeah, it was mentioned in that very long introduction as to what it is I do, but one of the things I do is I make short videos, documentaries, YouTube videos and stuff, and I've had a long time a list of locations that I wanted to go and visit, and handily a lot of them are in Scotland, so I'm going to try and take this opportunity to do that. One of the big ones that I've wanted to visit for a long time is Swona. Swona and Stroma are two islands between basically the Orkney Islands and the top of Scotland, and they are both abandoned. They were abandoned in the 1950s and 1960s. And they are amazing. They're just kind of in situ. A lot of the houses are left with bits and pieces still in them. Very kind of poignant places, and I've been wanting to make a film about that for some time. We've been talking loads about islands, but there's another place down near Edinburgh called Yester Castle as well. And it's got a very famous Goblin Hall, or Goblin Hall, which is an underground subterranean hall, essentially. And that has, again, been on the list for a long time, too. So I've got a lot of very odd, unusual places. The one that I'm hoping to go into the next couple of weeks is a place called Grunyard Island. Now, Grunyard Island is not a place most tourists would visit. It's famous because the government tested anthrax on the island in the 1950s and 60s. So I wouldn't recommend a staycation there. You know, there's no battles or llamas to like stay with on that island.
Yeah,
but it's a
start a pizza oven there.
Yeah, definitely not. But it's absolutely fascinating place, and I've been wanting to make a kind of small kind of video on it for a long time. So yeah, I've got a very eclectic mix of places that I need to tick off the list. But I've got a small camper van, and I do a lot of wild camping and stuff. So I'm quite keen to just kind of get out into the hills generally, though. It's just that feeling of going somewhere that you haven't been before, or places that you have been before, and just kind of like camping out, reading a book, just getting away from it for a bit. I mean, I know that living on Rassie, I've had it easier than most, but just that feeling of kind of exploring somewhere a bit new. I'm kind of looking forward to that a lot.
Definitely.
And we sort of talked a bit about, I think, Kay, you kind of mentioned about lots of places being booked up, actually, and a big Scottish staycation trend. Is there any kind of like schemes or incentives to try and like drive people, travellers to come back? And is there any kind of, you know, are there any whispers about when, you know, people coming back from abroad, have people started coming in from Europe?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of marketing efforts at the moment attracting people to come on staycations. I know that there was quite a bit of budget allocated in attracting people to come up from England. I'm not too sure about international marketing at the moment. Obviously, with there still being travel restrictions in place for North America, and we just don't know when that's going to change. So it's quite hard to say what's going to happen. I would like to think that when the restrictions are lifted, we're going to see a bit of a surge here, and we'll have all the North Americans that were meant to come this year, plus the ones that were planning to come next year. So, but I'm not too sure in terms of specific activity to bring people in. There's not anything I'm aware of at the moment, but I'm sure there will be things going on in the background. I'm not sure. Callum, do you know of anything that's happening?
There's been a few, I mean, certainly there's been quite a few government schemes and stuff like that to provide some, you know, financial assistance to small businesses and stuff. But I definitely echo, I certainly think that Visit Scotland's been doing a lot of stuff about, you know, staycations, coming up and visiting. I mean, if you have searched anything about Scotland, you'll probably notice you'll get quite a lot of Visit Scotland adverts popping up on YouTube and stuff like that, telling you, you know, Scotland needs you, come visit, you know, go out and see and stuff. And I think, you know, we've already talked about it a fair bit, but there's, I think there's been a really good response from people in the UK generally to exploring all parts of places that are near to them that they maybe hadn't done before. So I think, you know, certainly that it's looking promising. I think a lot of businesses have managed to kind of weather this quite well. I mean, the whiskey industry was all, you know, we were already not struggling, but there was some difficulties. There's been a tariff that's been imposed on Scotch whisky or single malt specifically by America as part of this trade war that's going on. And then obviously this whole shutdown's not come at a great time and stuff. But I think a lot of businesses are starting to kind of come out of it. There's the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, providing things kind of slowly open back up again.
Mm-hmm. And for the distillery specifically, for you guys on Rassie, it'll be a big year for you because obviously the whiskey is going to be ready. Do you think that's going to be celebrated extra hard this year because because we've missed out?
Yeah, I need a, yeah, we could do with a, we could do the, a new bottle of whiskey this year. I think we're all looking forward to that somewhat. We were quite lucky in that last year, 2019, we launched our gin, technically the very first legal spirit, you know, to come from the island. So that happened last year. And thank goodness, of course, the lockdown didn't happen then. This year, our whiskey is going to be ready in the next few months. So it'll be Christmas of this year before it's really ready. And again, it's like, well, luckily it hadn't happened next year because that's when the big springtime is going to be the big launch of our kind of core release, because that's when we're going to have enough spirit ready essentially that we can start bottling it. So we were quite lucky this year with it. Everything's still going to be released in time. You can still pre-order our whiskey. There's a few couple hundred bottles left and we can have it ready and dispatched. We're also very lucky in the fact that we distill everything on Rassie. We mature all of our casks, all of our barrels on the island, and we bottle everything here too. So we were uniquely placed to essentially bunker down, get ready, prepare ourselves, and then get ready for dispatching and stuff like that. But certainly in 3 years' time, there is basically going to be a gap where our production has been reduced because we actually had to, you know, suspend production for a little while. That's the problem with whiskey, is that you're kind of planning for 3, 5, 10 years down the line in that way. But yeah, I am really looking forward to the whiskey now. It's been a long year, so I don't think we're going to have a... We can't have a huge party, but, you know, I think we're going to maybe have a local sort of socially distant tasting. And then next year, when we have like a core product, when we have a lot more stock ready, the core releases, we're calling it. I think, yeah, it's going to be a big launch, providing we can do it. We had a launch for the gin here last year. It was fantastic. We had a band up and everything. So I am I'm holding out for that now. It's going to be, hopefully the weather will be as good as it is now.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, exactly. Cheers to that, you guys.
Definitely. Cheers to that. Cheers to
that. I think we all need a dram after this year.
That sounds amazing.
So it's been lovely having you both join us. It's been an amazing conversation. I really, really want to go to Scotland as soon as possible.
Oh, you guys,
really.
You're making me feel homesick.
Yeah. It's good job you're going back next week, Danielle. Huge thanks to Kay. You can catch her blog at thechaoticscot.com and also the Facebook group. If you just remind us what that was called again.
It's the Dreaming of Scotland Facebook group. It's Dreaming of Scotland, the Chaotic Scot Travel Community. That's a bit of a mouthful. Sorry.
But yeah, that sounds like a great place to share all your Scottish travel memories. And thanks to Callum as well. You can sort of check out the Rassie Distillery at rassiedistillery.com. That's Rassie with R-A-A-S-A-Y. Is that right?
Yeah, R-A-A-S-A-Y.
Distillery.com. So huge thanks to both of you guys. And Callum has tons and tons of projects, which, to quote himself, we'd be here all day if we directed you to all of them. But you could, if you Google Callum Rassie, you'll I'm sure you'll come across some of his amazing work.
The bottomless pit of weird stuff.
But thanks so much for joining us, guys. Can't wait to talk more Scottish adventures with you at some point soon.
So if you fancy a trip to Scotland yourself after listening to this episode, our DK Eyewitness Scotland guide is now available. Whether you want to see Edinburgh's famous streets, take awe-inspiring hikes in the Highlands, or sample the odd wee dram, or gin, of course, if you're not into whisky, your DK Eyewitness travel guide makes sure that you experience all that Scotland has to offer. Find it in all good retailers or on Amazon via the link in our episode description.
So on the next episode of Where To Go, we will be crossing the Atlantic and visiting the USA National Parks, which should be really, really fun, quite different to this. But for now, thank you very much for joining us. And again, huge thanks to all of our guests and Danielle today discussing all things Scotland. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, James.
Where To Go was produced by the team at DK Eyewitness and presented by Danielle Watt and James Atkinson. For more information about DK Eyewitness, follow us on social media at DK Eyewitness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.